Now, if you look back over Genesis 2, you'll see an interesting order to things. We're told, and I'll just do this real flyby. God took man, put man in the garden, commanded the man, you may freely eat, you shall not eat, you shall surely die. You with me? Then, after commanding the man in verse 18, okay, and that's where you might want to look, the command, you know, don't eat of that tree. You'll die if you do, right? It was then following verse 18 that God determined that it's not good for man to be alone. So I will make a helper comparable to him. Now notice, the evaluation by God that it was not good that man be alone, it came immediately after God had given Adam the command to be obedient to his word. I find that fascinating. Like, it would appear right from the beginning of time that God knew that for Adam to remain obedient to his commands, that one command, he would be benefited greatly by having a righteous woman to come alongside to help him. Now, there is a simple reality that as part of God's very design, women do hold considerable sway over men. Not sure if you're aware of this. Get married. You'll figure it out. But in addition to holding sway over a man, women have an influence for that man to do good and sometimes to do evil. Like, sadly, in our story, as we saw last Sunday, the woman Eve held such influence that following her rebellion, Adam made a decision, right? He decided that he would prefer to die with Eve than live alone in the garden without her. She gave him the fruit, we're told, and he ate. Now note, with this in mind, it makes complete sense why the serpent, Satan, would target Eve. She was the helper, Adam's helper. He needed her to be whole. You know, I can also imagine that if Adam had eaten the fruit first, right? Like, let's reverse this. So Adam eats the fruit and brings it to Eve. Like, it's probably likely that Eve would have been like, tough, bud. I'm cool without you, you know? Like, there was a reason that Eve was targeted because Adam's like, I can't do it without you, babe. If it had been the other way, Eve would have been like, dude, tough. I got this garden out of myself. Awesome. Isn't it true? Think about it. That a woman settles a man to a certain degree. Yeah, like, isn't that a truth? A single man. Single men are free. Free to roam. A single man works for the weekend. Works hard. Blows it all on the weekend. A single man's impulsive. He's passionate. Even reckless. A single man drinks IPAs. And yet, when a woman enters his life, things immediately, what? They begin to settle down. A man's now home for dinner. He's saving for a secure future. A man sells the motorcycle. More measured in his decisions. Like, when a woman finally enters the picture, right? This ruly man, supernatural things begin to occur. He cleans himself up. He starts to shower frequently. He brushes his teeth. He shaves. If not, he at least grooms. Like, a man who's married, a man with a woman, is more conscious about his health. I mean, good grief, a woman can even get a man to drink light beer. Terrible. It's why we say, you know, when we see someone, young man, sowing his roots, we say, man, that boy, he needs a good woman. That's why we say this, because he does need a good woman. Now, don't get me wrong. There are many examples of men living godly lives without there being a woman behind the scene. You can look at the prophets, many of the apostles, Paul, great example. However, there is no doubt that a woman does exert a powerful spiritual influence over their man. It's why God is constantly throughout the Old Testament warning the children of Israel, what? Do not marry these pagan women. Don't do it. Why? Because God knew full well that a pagan woman could turn even the godliest of men to idolatry. King Solomon, right? It was his wives that turned his heart from God. You know, Samson, such potential. What was his Achilles heel? Oh, Delilah. Even wicked Queen Jezebel can be an example. Single men, here's my point. If your life is about following Jesus, the best thing you can do is to marry a righteous woman who is doing the same. It's the best thing you can do. I can also attest that nothing will hinder your walk with God quicker than hooking up with a gal who does not share the same pursuit. It's a truth. Single ladies, my single ladies. That was a Beyonce reference, but whatever. While the same idea obviously applies, let's go kind of at a different angle. If your man, the man you're interested in, does not have a desire presently to attend church or to even really follow Jesus in the way that you want to, you need to consider two things. One, why is he interested in you? If that's something that's a big part of your life, church and following Jesus and the things of the Lord, then why is the guy who has no interest in those things like hitting on you? And two, if you can't influence him now, spiritually, you will likely never be able to. And take that as a word of warning. Now, married women, do not underestimate the spiritual influence you have on your husbands. You have the power to help him be the man that God has called him to be, or you have the power to cap him off at the knees. You can help him keep his eyes on heaven and his work to that pursuit, or you can push him to store up for you treasures on this earth. Treasures that break, corrupt, need fixing, repairs, batteries, require insurance, etc. Ladies, you can encourage your husband to fulfill God's call, and you can then help him carry the sacrifices, or you can selfishly supersede this calling with one of your own. You can enable your man to lead your home, or you can make that task so difficult, he'll simply advocate the job to you so he can go fishing. You can make his home a refuge or another battleground. You have that power. It's your choice. Consider this, that in her selfishness, even Sarah was able to convince the father of our faith, Abraham, to take God's promises into his own hands and sleep with the handmaiden, Hagar, the influence of a woman. Now, on a side note, if you're married to a man who isn't following Jesus and you don't feel like you have that type of influence, please don't lose heart. You are an influence. Whether you see it, whether you don't, you are an influence. It's a call. It's a truth, isn't it, that the most practical way that Jesus can reveal himself to your husband will be through the way that you live, the way you love, the way you pray, the way that you fill his home with a light from heaven. You have that power. Now, husbands, you don't get off the hook. My exhortation, a little different, still an exhortation. Not only did Adam fail in his God-given role of accurately communicating to his wife the truth, as we saw last Sunday, by omitting, amending, and tempering God's word. But you know, I had another thought as I was reading back through this text. You look at the first 6 verses of chapter 3. Where's Adam? Like, where is he? Like, when this crafty serpent comes to his wife to tempt her, he's MIA, missing in action. Like, I'm struck by the reality that Eve was alone when faced with the temptation of the enemy. And whatever the reason, I can say this story does illustrate an important reality, fellas. Distance allowed by a husband with his wife will only create room for a crafty, sly enemy.